Community colleges are funded in three main ways. The first being by the legislature, which, much like with the school districts, the amount has decreased significantly over the years. It's now only 23% of their budget, but their funding structure is set with the legislature appropriating a set amount for core operations for the colleges, but then variable amounts based on contact hours and student success points. It's kind of a formula set by graduation rates, et cetera. They also are funded, the bulk of their funding is then from local taxes at about 40%. And though it's 40% of their revenue, it's only 4 to 5% of your tax bill. So it's a very small amount of your tax bill that has tremendous benefits from the community. And as you can see here on the map, they don't even reach out to tax the bulk of the state. So it is relatively limited what their taxing districts are. And these taxing districts are important to the final form of revenue, and that is tuition. The tuition rates are set whether a student is within the taxing district, outside of the taxing district, and so it's actually very, very affordable. Say you were to take 15 hours a semester at one of your community colleges, the average cost would be about $2,700 in tuition. Add $2,000 to that for out-of-district students. And then if you have students who are coming from outside of the state because, say, they would like to be a Kilgore Rangerette, they would pay another $2,000. So even at that top amount, it'd be about $6,000, which is very affordable in comparison to some of the university costs. The community colleges are responsible for providing services to their taxing districts, but their service areas actually reach beyond that. So there are statutory requirements for community colleges to serve a specific area. And you'll see those areas cover the bulk of the state. We do have a few counties that do not fall under the service areas of any of the colleges. But certainly we do recognize that a number of the campuses are actually located within the taxing districts. And so that's become a bit more of a point of contention in recent years as school districts who are not within the taxing district but within the service area of one of the community colleges are looking for more dual credit opportunities for their students and being able to have some flexibility in not having to only go to the community college of their particular service area, but being able to receive services from other community colleges. So over time, the requirement and the focus on the services being from that local community colleges really kind of decreased to where we're seeing more flexibility for school districts to go outside of their particular community college. So for example, there is a law that states that all of the Harris County community colleges are required to enter into a dual credit agreement with all of the school districts within the county. And so there is some level of flexibility, but it's definitely kind of an area of tension that we're experiencing right now. Now, insofar as management of the community colleges, the composition of their boards look very much like school district boards, with the exception that the board members serve for 6 years. They're elected in even numbered years and by a majority election. With the school districts, do have the opportunity to have a plurality election. Our bill to try to have that option actually was vetoed by Abbott last session, so we do not have that same flexibility. We also do have a couple of boards where the commissioners of the counties in the service areas, not in the taxing district, but in the service areas, by law, have the opportunity to appoint board members so that those counties have a voice on the board. So there is definitely a lot of shifting in how these boards will be managed. But overall, we do see that the purpose of these boards is very similar to the school district boards in that they are there to serve their community in the governance, oversight, and policymaking functions for the community college. But what you will not see in the law is the same level of clear distinction of roles as you will see for the boards and superintendents at the school district level. So you'll see a lot of laws that say the junior college shall do such and such. And so really, we have to read within these general purposes, whether it would be the board or the college president or chancellor's responsibility for doing those things. The Higher Ed Coordinating Board, unlike TEA, does not look into micromanagement issues of board members. That is instead something that SAC COC looks at during the reaffirmation process. Now, community college employees are subject to three different types of arrangements for employment arrangements. We'll see them be at will, contract, and then they have the concept, of course, that you've probably heard of, which is tenure. I will say that this continuous employment type of function for faculty has been significantly on the way, and we probably only have about a quarter of the colleges within the state still have, still offer tenure, and even those are not, are kind of phasing it out. So it is on the way. But there is significant flexibility. Unlike with teachers at the school district level, there is significant flexibility in the types of contracts that can be issued to the community college employees. They certainly, there's a few provisions that kind of have effects on the back end, but overall there's definitely a lot of flexibility. And you'll also see a difference in the way that benefits are awarded to community college employees, where at the school district level, everything goes through TRS, whether it be health or retirement benefits. But at the higher education, at the community college level, they actually receive health care benefits from ERS, and it's much more generous coverage. They are subject to the same rules as apply to other institutions of higher education, so their full-time employees' health premiums are fully covered and 50% for their dependents.